This edition of The Bulletin with UBS was first broadcast on the 24th of May 2015 on Monocle 24. The Bulletin, in association with UBS.
Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're asking whether it might be time to consider an attempt to regulate against market bubbles. We'll be discussing why this sometimes vexing question is back on the agenda now and consider what might have prompted central banks' concerns. We'll also look at some specific examples, from house prices to capital buffers, as we assess the pros and cons of regulation as a means to burst market bubbles. We start with some insights from our regular experts into why this question is so pertinent right now. Kiran Ganesh is cross-asset strategist at UBS. He explains the current dynamics and why poor coordination of existing regulation is a worry.
I think probably the reason why it's starting to come back is that we've obviously had QE for a number of years now across the world, and you know, most recently in the Eurozone, and you know, a number of the side effects of QE are now starting to become, I guess, more evident. If we look at some of the comments that the ECB President Draghi's been making, there seems to be some concern around possible increases in terms of wealth inequality that may be as a result of QE. The fact that it's obviously leading to very strong performance from financial assets, but the effect on the economy is a bit slower to come through. So that's one thing that's obviously coming to mind, obviously with the inequality debate remaining a very hot topic among politicians as well. And I guess the second thing is related to the liquidity in markets. We've seen in just the past couple of weeks quite a sharp sell-off in government bonds on sometimes quite low levels of liquidity. And again, I think central banks are starting to grow maybe a little bit concerned that some of the actions in terms of quantitative easing is actually serving to reduce the amount of liquidity in some of the markets like the government bond market.
Pim Fox is the host of Bloomberg TV's Taking Stock. Does he think the time is now for regulation against market bubbles?
The time is always now. The problem is it never works. It's like pushing, trying to get the toothpaste back into the tube. Once it's out, you can't really do anything about it. And because of the way that markets work and the fact that money flows to its, seeks its own level, much like water does, it would be very difficult to impose any kind of global regulation on market speculation that would have any of the desired effects, because what they would do is they would just create new industries that would take advantage of the fact that one jurisdiction has regulations that benefit them versus another organization or another regime. So as far as trying to regulate bubbles, you can probably do things to try to mitigate increases in asset prices. But even then, we've seen that, hope over experience, it triumphs every time. And as a result, if the incentives are there, people are going to make outsized bets in order to make outsized returns. Problem is, they end up with outsized losses. The goal should be not to have the taxpayer subsidize those losses when they happen.
Min Lan Tan, head of the Asia-Pacific Investment Office at the CIO at UBS Wealth Management, explains how much of a problem this has been in those markets that she focuses on.
In a world of zero interest rate policies, concerns over market bubbles are widespread and actually very valid. If you look at property prices in major gateway cities, regional as well as global ones, they've all gone up very sharply in recent times. We've seen this phenomenon not just in New York and London and Vancouver, but also closer to home in Hong Kong and Singapore. So I do think that as wealth inequality rises, social tension rises as well. And it's actually understandable that government the world over is actually under pressure to try to shield locals from the inflationary impact of international capital flows and investor demand. So the so-called macroprudential measures, I think going forward, will be a reality of life.
Bill O'Neill, head of CIO Research UK at UBS Wealth Management, explains that one significant challenge is quite fundamental. That is, identifying when a bubble is actually underway.
The difficulty here is, as always, identifying when a bubble is actually underway. Much like any the rest of us mortals, central bankers, regulators, have no underlying sort of knowledge or wisdom as to whether a move higher in markets is actually fundamentally based, say, be it on strength of rents or strength of earnings, or a bubble-like characteristic. There's some few telltale signs, few telltale indications, like basically feedback loops, forms of sort of mania, etc. But still, the difficulty is to identify when a bubble is underway. We can see when basically it's much progressed, but it's difficult to say underway. And I think that's always the concern here. But at what point do regulators and central banks intervene on the basis that it is a bubble?
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at some examples of regulation intended to bust market bubbles and consider their effectiveness. Now we're going to cycle through some specific examples of market-specific regulation, exploring not only how it works, but considering some case studies. First up to Switzerland. One regulatory example involves getting banks to hold more capital, counter-cyclical capital buffers. How does this work, and how has it shaped the Swiss experience? Daniel Kalt, Regional Chief Investment Officer and Chief Economist for UBS Switzerland, gives his view.
This tool was introduced in Switzerland in 2012, and the FINMA, so the Swiss regulator and the Swiss National Bank, started to hike these capital buffers for banks, for mortgage banks, in 2013. So they can force banks to put aside up to 2.5% more capital or percentage point of capital in addition to their normal capital buffers that they have to hold against mortgages. Now in 2013, they hiked that capital buffer by 1% and mid last year, another percentage point to 2%. So mortgage banks in Switzerland now have to hold 2 percentage points more capital against each mortgage they provide to the market. But there's also the problem I already kind of alluded to. This hits only banks in Switzerland, which is of course helping in a sense to prevent the bubble from further inflating here in the country. But there's other market players such as insurance companies or pension funds, which are not in the scope of this regulation, and they have started to now increase their activities in the mortgage market as the business for banks has become more costly.
But there are limitations when it comes to this type of regulatory tool. What other approaches are there, or should there be? Daniel explains.
It has certainly helped to kind of cool the market somewhat down here in Switzerland by introducing these measures. The capital buffer was one element, but there were other elements that the Swiss National Bank and also the FINMA, the regulatory body here in Switzerland, have pushed for. And it's probably the range of tools that they have started to apply or pushed banks to do. For instance, they have pushed banks to impose something we call a self-regulation here in Switzerland. So banks have started to tighten their lending standards. For instance, as a private household, when you wanted to finance a single-family house or an apartment, you could bring all your equity from your pension fund, actually. So you have to bring 20% of equity to finance a house. That's the minimum standard here in Switzerland. Before that, you could actually just bring all that equity from your pension fund, which you took the money out of the pension fund. Now, banks now have self-imposed a regulation that only 10% could now come from the pension fund, and the other 10% would have to be hard cash, real savings of a household. And that has also helped to kind of cool down the market somewhat, because let's say the marginal households, those households who actually do not have the savings to buy a house, are being priced out of the market in a sense. That has also helped I would say, to create kind of a subprime mortgage market here in the country.
Daniel Kalt there. What about house prices? First in Hong Kong and Singapore, Min Lan Tan explains how certain regulations affected this area and whether they are effective. Take house price-specific regulations in Hong Kong, for example.
If you look at Hong Kong specifically, home prices have gone up actually about 1.5 times since the bottom of 2008, and today it still stands at about 35% higher than the previous peak in 1997. Now, in terms of measures that have been implemented, the government has effectively lowered the loan-to-value ratios to as low as 40% for non-owner-occupied properties. Stamp duties have also been doubled for repeated home buyers. And at the same time, there are special stamp duties of 15% imposed on non-residents. Now, the impact of that has been that the transaction volume in the secondary market has fallen a lot, and the buying or demand from mainland Chinese have also fallen significantly. Now, I would say that there are both pros and cons to the measures that have been implemented so far. Without these measures, prices would definitely have gone up even more in Hong Kong. And the macroprudential measures, they are rather versatile and they are targeted, which means that unlike interest rates, which tends to penalize all investment, targeted measures would actually target essentially the undesirable ones. But the cons of these measures are that they can create distortion. So, for example, if you look at Hong Kong, smaller home prices have actually gone up relative to the bigger homes because of relatively higher LTVs and also because of lower stamp duties. So this end up actually disproportionately penalizing the middle class, which is exactly the group that the government is trying to protect. So I guess in conclusion, it is not a panacea. It should be used, but it is not a panacea. We still have to resolve the fundamental problem that is driving asset prices higher, which effectively is excess liquidity and financial repression as a result of QE.
In the United Kingdom, house price specific regulation is something that the Bank of England has looked at before. How appropriate could that be right now? Bill O'Neill takes up the story.
The irony, is that our view on the UK residential market is that it's sort of neither boom nor bust. There have been a number of steps taken to actually deal with the potential ramifications of a housing market bubble here in the UK. Last year, we saw things, for instance, in a big shift in underwriting standards or credit loan standards around basically people's conditions, living conditions, financial conditions, etc. We also saw limitations in terms of loan-to-income ratios as well, that loans in terms of basically banks' requirements set against capital. So these set capital against these. So these are actually issues that are actually being addressed under the whole sort of moniker of macroprudential tools, which are alleviating the pressure on interest rates to deal with what may be potential bubble situations. So far, it seems to have had some impact. Yes, certainly the mortgage market review, the adjustment in underwriting standards and in loan standards, that did provide us a sort of buffer to market strength last year. It may wear off, of course, because credit conditions generally are just so loose at the moment.
What about the risks associated with over-regulation? It's instructive to look back to the pre-2009 situation, according to Min Lan Tan.
I think at this point it is valid because prior to the great financial crisis in 2009, now the crisis itself had its genesis in the bursting of the housing market in the US. Now prior to this, central banks the world over essentially felt that the role of monetary policy is just to ensure consumer price stability and to ensure stability in the outcome with regards to employment and with regards to GDP growth. There were not a lot of focus on financial system stability, and therefore there weren't a lot of focus on the formation of asset market bubbles. But I think post the financial crisis, there's definitely a rethink of central banking policy, and the upshot of that is the adoption of macroprudential measures to directly target specific speculative bubbles, instead of just relying on general monetary policy tools or micromanagement of individual institutions. I think the upshot of this is actually that we should get less systemic risk going forward. So I would think that this is actually a healthy development.
Earlier, Kiran Ganesh mentioned more draconian measures as one of the key risks associated with overregulation. What are the key concerns about this phenomenon in Kiran's view?
I guess there's always issues, you know, regulation tends to be relatively well intentioned, but there's always side effects that can be difficult to predict at first when they come in place, but then they can materialise later. I think a good example of this comes in the government bond space. You know, I mentioned earlier the liquidity. And the lack of liquidity in the government bond space is partly due to the fact that, you know, regulation has led to the amount of inventory that a number of banks can hold in terms of their trading books reducing, and that is leading to lower liquidity. Now, I think the regulation was, you know, well intended to try and reduce the amount of risk on bank balance sheets, but it is leading to the side effect of lower liquidity. So I think the general point about over-regulation tends to be more one that the more regulations you have in place, the more chance there is that some of these unintended consequences become clear.
In conclusion then, let's ask our experts one simple question. Is it time to regulate against market bubbles? Daniel Kalt.
As long as central banks do not have their usual policy tool at hand, namely hiking interest rates, because we're very close to deflationary environment, the Fed, of course, could come into a situation going forward where they have, again, the possibility to hike rates somewhat. But in Europe and in some countries in Europe where property markets are running hot now, it's probably an option for regulators to think about these macroprudential measures to lean against property bubbles, which are starting to form now or starting to inflate now. So I'd say yes, in an environment where we probably will have for a longer time still very low interest rates or zero interest rates, it can make sense in trying to prevent property bubbles with these measures. But of course, you have to remove these regulations again after we are going back into a normal monetary policy regime.
So what is the lie of the land in this low-yield environment, and what does it tell us about the efficacy of regulation to beat market bubbles? Pim Fox again.
You know, the three-headed hydra, right? You've got the private market, which are market speculators. You have the intermediaries, which are the banks and, in some cases, the central banks. And then you have the governments themselves, which are flooding world markets with about as much debt as they can consume, which is one of the reasons why interest rates are so low. It's not just because of economic activity, but when you have a huge supply of something, you find that people are not willing to pay a lot for it. And there's a huge supply of government debt. As a result, you don't necessarily see this rush into these government bonds. A lot of companies, a lot of pension funds, insurance businesses, they've got to buy this stuff, and they're going to be stuck with some very low-yielding paper for a long time. But as far as bubbles are concerned, bubbles are different than just bad investment ideas. You know, bubbles are like the South Sea bubble or the bubble in asset prices related to, let's say, technology investments around the year 2000. But as far as trying to legislate away bubbles, I'm not sure that there's any example of that being workable.
And that's Pim Fox bringing us to the end of this 33rd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.